Though I was due for dinner in Vaden City that night, I insisted upon visiting Kolinar to speak with Tivbet. The tariffs through Eurythiru were growing quite unreasonable. By then, the so-called Radiants had already begun to show their true nature. Following the firing of the original Palinaeum, only one page of Terxim's autobiography remained, and this is the only line of any use to me.
Kaladin dreamed he was the storm. He raged forward, the storm wall behind him, his trailing cape, soaring above a heaving black expanse.
The ocean.
His passing churned up a tempest, slamming waves into one another, lifting whitecaps to be caught in his wind. He approached a dark continent and soared upward, higher, higher. He left the sea behind. The vastness of the continent spread out before him, seemingly endless, an ocean of rock.
So large.
He hadn't understood. How could he have? He roared past the shattered plains. They looked as if something very large had hit them at the center, sending rippling breaks outward. They, too, were larger than he'd expected. No wonder nobody had been able to find their way through the chasms. There was a large plateau at the center, but with the darkness and the distance, he could not see much. There were lights, though.
Someone lives there.
He did see that the eastern side of the plains was very different from the western side, marked by tall, spindly pillars, plateaus that had nearly been worn away. Despite that, he could see a symmetry to the shattered plains. From high above, the plains resembled a work of art. In a moment, he was past them, continuing north and west to soar above the Sea of Spears, a shallow inland sea where broken fingers of rock jutted above the water. He passed over Alethkar, catching a glimpse of the great city of Kolinar, built amid formations of rock-like fins rising from the stone. Then he turned southward, away from anything he knew. He crested majestic mountains, densely populated at their tips, with villages clustered near vents that emitted steam or lava.
The Horn-Eater Peaks.
He left them with rain and winds rumbling down into foreign lands. He passed cities and open plains, villages and twisting waterways. There were many armies. Kaladin passed tents pulled flat against the leeward sides of rock formations, stakes driven into the rock to hold them taut, men hidden inside. He passed hillsides where soldiers huddled in clefts. He passed large wooden wagons built to house light eyes while at war.
How many wars is this world fighting? Is there nowhere that is at peace?
He took a path to the southwest, blowing toward a city built in long troughs in the ground that looked like giant claw marks ripped across the landscape. He was over it in a flash, passing a hinterland where the stone itself was ribbed and rippled like frozen waves of water. The people in this kingdom were dark-skinned, like Sigzil. The land went on and on. Hundreds of cities, thousands of villages, people with faintly blue veins beneath their skin. A place where the pressure of the approaching high storm blew water out of spouts in the ground. A city where people lived in gigantic, hollowed-out stalactites hanging beneath a titanic sheltered ridge. Westward he blew. The land was so vast, so enormous, so many different people, it dazzled his mind. War seemed far less prevalent in the west than it was in the east, and that comforted him. But still he was troubled. Peace seemed a scarce commodity in the world. Something drew his attention, strange flashes of light. He blew toward them at the forefront of the storm.
What are those lights?
They came in bursts, forming the strangest patterns, almost like physical things that he could reach out and touch, spherical bubbles of light that vibrated with spikes and troughs. Kaladin crossed a strange city laid out in a triangular pattern with tall peaks rising like sentries at the corners and the center. The flashes of light were coming from a building on the central peak. Kaladin knew he would pass quickly, for as the storm, he could not retreat. Ever westward he blew. He threw open the door with his wind, entering a long hallway with bright red tile walls, mosaic murals that he passed too quickly to make out. He rustled the skirts of tall, golden-haired serving women who carried trays of food or steaming towels. The flashes of light came from directly ahead, so transfixing. Brushing past a pretty gold and red-haired woman who huddled frightened in a corner, Kaladin burst through a door. He had one brief glimpse of what lay beyond. A man stood over two corpses, his pale head shaved, his clothing white. The murderer held a long, thin sword in one hand. He looked up from his victims and almost seemed to see Kaladin. He had large shin eyes. It was too late to see anything more. Kaladin blew out the window, throwing shutters wide and streaking into the night. More cities, mountains, and forests passed in a blur. At his advent, plants curled up their leaves, rock buds closed their shells, and shrubs withdrew their branches. Before long, he neared the Western Ocean.
Child Tanabast, child of honor, child of one long since departed.
A sudden voice shook Kaladin. He floundered in the air. The booming sound made the storm wall itself vibrate. Kaladin hit the ground, separating from the storm. He skidded to a stop, feet throwing up sprays of water. Storm winds crashed into him, but he was enough a part of them that they neither tossed nor shook him.
Men ride the storms no longer. The oath pact is broken, child of honor.
I don't understand!
A face formed before him, the face he had seen before, the aged face as wide as the sky, its eyes full of stars.
Orion comes. Most dangerous of all the 16, you will not go.
Something blew against him.
Wait! Why is there so much war? Must we always fight?
Kaladin wasn't sure why he asked. The questions simply came out. The face vanished, shattering into droplets of water.
Odium reigns.
Kaladin awoke. He was surrounded by dark figures holding him down against the hard stone floor. Instinctively, he snapped his hands outward to the sides, each grabbing an ankle and jerking to pull two assailants off balance. Kaladin used the moment to twist while bringing an arm up in a sweep. He knocked free the hands pushing him down, rocked and threw himself forward, lurching into the man directly in front of him. Kaladin rolled over him, tucking and coming up on his feet, free of his captives. He spun, flinging sweat from his brow.
Where's my spear?
He clutched for the knife at his belt.
No knife. No spear.
Storm you, Kaladin!
Kaladin raised a hand to his breast, dispelling the strange dream.
Bridge 4. I am with Bridge 4. The King's Storm Wardens predicted a high storm in the early morning hours.
It's all right. What were you doing?
You tried to go out in the storm.
Had the door open to the rain, staring out as if you'd been hit on the head with stone. We had to pull you back. It's not good for you to spend another 2 weeks sick in bed, eh?
Kaladin calmed himself.
You wouldn't wake up.
Kaladin glanced at the Azish man sitting with his back to the stone wall. He hadn't tried to hold Kaladin down.
You were having some kind of fever dream.
I feel just fine.
That wasn't quite true. His head ached and he was exhausted. The single diamond sphere in the corner flickered. Then its light faded away, leaving them in darkness.
Storm it! That eel Gaz! He's been giving us dun spheres again!
Kaladin crossed the pitch-black barracks, stepping carefully. His headache faded away as he felt for the door. He pushed it open, letting in the faint light of an overcast morning. The winds were weak, but the rain still fell. He stepped out and was shortly soaked through. The other bridgemen followed him out, and Rock tossed Kaladin a small chunk of soap. Like most of the others, Kaladin wore only his loincloth, and he lathered himself up in the cold downpour. The soap smelled of oil and was gritty with the sand suspended in it. No sweet, soft soaps for bridgemen. Kaladin tossed the bit of soap to Bissig, a thin bridge man with an angular face. He took it gratefully. Bissig didn't say much, and began to lather up as Kaladin let the rain wash the soap from his body and hair. To the side, Rock was using a bowl of water to shave and trim his horn-eater beard, long in the sides and covering the cheeks, but clean below the lips and chin. It made an odd counterpoint to his head, which he shaved up the center, from directly above the eyebrows back. He trimmed the rest of his hair short. Rock's hand was smooth and careful, and he didn't so much as nick himself. Once finished, he stood up and waved to the men waiting behind him. One by one, he shaved any who wanted it. He occasionally paused to sharpen the razor, using his whetstone and leather strop. Kaladin raised his fingers to his own beard. He hadn't been clean-shaven since he'd been in Amaram's army so long ago. He walked forward to join those waiting in line.
Sit, my friend, sit. It's good you have come. Your face is more like scraggle bark branches than a proper beard.
Shave it clean. And I'd rather not have a strange pattern like yours.
You are a lowlander, my good friend. It's not right for you to wear a Humaka Aban. I would have to thump you soundly if you tried this thing.
I thought you said fighting was beneath you.
It's allowed several important exceptions. Now stop with your talking, unless you wish to be losing a lip.
Rock began by trimming the beard down, then lathered and shaved, starting at the left cheek. Kaladin had never let another shave him before. When he'd first gone to war, he'd been young enough that he'd barely needed to shave at all. He'd grown into doing it himself as he got older. Rock's touch was deft, and Kaladin didn't feel any nicks or cuts. In a few minutes, Rock stood back. Kaladin raised his fingers to his chin, touching smooth, sensitive skin. His face felt cold, strange to the touch. It took him back, transformed him, just a little, into the man he had been.
Strange. How much difference a shave can make. I should have done this weeks ago.
The riddens had turned to drizzle, heralding the storm's last whispers. Kaladin stood up, letting the water wash bits of shorn hair from his chest. Baby-faced Dunny, the last of those waiting, sat down for his turn at being shaven. He hardly needed it at all.
The shave suits you.
Kaladin turned to see Sigzil leaning against the wall of the barrack just under the roof's overhang.
Your face has strong lines, square and firm, with a proud chin. We would call it a leader's face among my people.
I'm no light eyes.
You hate them so much.
I hate their lies. I hate it that I used to believe they were honorable.
And would you cast them down, rule in their place?
No.
This seemed to surprise Sigzil. To the side, Syl finally appeared, having finished frolicking in the winds of the high storm. He always worried, just a little, that she'd ride away with them and leave him.
Have you no thirst to punish those who have treated you so?
Oh, I'm happy to punish them, but I have no desire to take their place, nor do I wish to join them.
Moash approached.
I'd join them in a heartbeat.
Moash folded his arms across his lean, well-muscled chest.
If I were in charge, things would change. The Light Eyes would work the mines and the fields. They would run bridges and die by Parshendi arrows.
Won't happen. But I won't blame you for trying.
Have either of you ever heard of the land of Bobatharnum?
No. It's a funny name for a country, though.
Personally, I always thought Alethkar sounded like a ridiculous name. I guess it depends on where you were raised.
So why bring up
Bobatharnum. I visited there once with my master. They have very peculiar trees. The entire plant, trunk and all, lies down when a high storm approaches, as if built on hinges. I was thrown in prison 3 times during our visit there. The Babeth are quite particular about how you speak. My master was quite displeased at the amount he had to pay to free me. Of course, I think they were using any excuse to imprison a foreigner, as they knew my master had deep pockets. One of those imprisonments was my fault. The women there, you see, have these patterns of veins that sit shallowly beneath their skin. Some visitors find it unnerving, but I found the patterns beautiful. Almost irresistible.
Kaladin frowned.
Didn't I see something like that in my dream?
I bring up Babith because they have a curious system of rule there. You see, the elderly are given office. The older you are, the more authority you have. Everyone gets a chance to rule if they live long enough. The king is called the Most Ancient.
Sounds fair. Better than deciding who rules based on eye color.
Ah, yes. The Babeth are very fair. Currently, the Monavaka dynasty reigns.
How can you have a dynasty if you choose your leaders based on their age?
Oh, it's actually quite easy. You just execute anyone who gets old enough to challenge you.
They do that?
Yes, unfortunately. There is a great deal of unrest in Babatharnum. It was dangerous to visit when we did. The Monavakas make very certain that their family members lived the longest. You see, for 50 years, no one outside their family has become most ancient. All others have fallen through assassinations, exile, or death on the battlefield.
That's horrible.
I doubt many would disagree. But I mention these horrors for a purpose. You see, it has been my experience that no matter where you go, you will find some who abuse their power. Eye color is not so odd a method compared to many others I have seen. If you were to overthrow the Light Eyes and place yourself in power, Moash, I doubt that the world would be a very different place. The abuses would still happen, simply to other people.
No, I'd change the world, Sigzel, and I mean to.
And how are you going to do that?
I came to this war to get myself a shard blade, and I still mean to do it, somehow.
You joined up assuming they'd make you a spearman, didn't you?
Yes. Some of those who joined with me did become soldiers, but most of us got sent to the bridge crews. This plan of yours had better work, Lordling. Last time I ran away, I got a beating. I was told if I tried again, I'd get a slave's mark instead.
I never promised it would work, Moash. If you've got a better idea, go ahead and share it.
Well, if you really do teach us the spear like you promised, then I guess I don't care.
Kaladin glanced about, warily checking to see if Gaz or any bridgemen from other crews were nearby.
Keep quiet. Don't speak of that outside of the chasms.
Moash glared at him, but remained silent.
You don't really think they'd let you have a shard blade, do you?
Any man can win a shard blade. Slave or free, light eyes or dark, it's the law.
Assuming they follow the law.
I'll do it somehow.
I have heard of this place you spoke of, Sigzel. Babatharnum. My cousin visited there one time. They have very tasty snails.
That is a long distance to travel for a horn eater.
Nearly same distance as for an Azish. Actually much more, since you have such little legs. I have seen your kind before.
What? Azish? We are not so rare.
No, not your race, your type. What is it they are called? Visiting places around the land, telling others of what they have seen. Our world singer, yes, is the right name, no?
Sigzel froze. Then he suddenly stood up straight and stalked away from the barrack without looking back.
Now why is he acting like this thing? I am not ashamed of being cook. Why is he ashamed of being world singer?
World singer?
I do not know much. Our strange people say they must travel to each kingdom and tell the people there are other kingdoms. He's a kind of storyteller. Though they are thinking of themselves as much more.
He's probably some kind of bright lord in his country. The way he talks. Wonder how he ended up with us Kremlings.
Hey! What'd you do to Sigzel? He promised to tell me about my homeland.
Homeland? You're from Alethkar.
Sigzel said these violet eyes of mine aren't native to Alethkar. He thinks I must have Vaden blood in me.
Your eyes aren't violet, Dunny.
Sure they are! You can see it in bright sunlight. They're just... really dark.
Huh! If you are from Vedana, we are cousins. The peaks are near Vedanar. Sometimes the people there have good red hair, like us.
Be glad that someone didn't mistake your eyes for red, Dunny. Moash, Rock, go gather your sub-squads and pass the word to Teth and Scar. I want the men oiling their vests and sandals against the humidity.
The men did as ordered. The army provided the oil. While the bridge men were expendable, good hogshide and metal for buckles were not cheap. As the men gathered to work, the sun broke through the clouds. The warmth of the light felt good on Kaladin's rain-wet skin. There was something refreshing about the chill of a high storm followed by the sun. Tiny rockbud polyps on the side of the building opened, drinking in the wet air. Those would have to be scraped free. Rockbuds would eat away the stone of the walls, creating pockmarks and cracks. The buds were a deep crimson. It was Chactal, third day of the week. The slave markets would show new wares. That would mean new bridgemen. Kaladin's crew was in serious danger. Yaked had caught an arrow in the arm during their last run, and Delp had caught one in the neck. There'd been nothing Kaladin could do for him, and with Yake wounded, Kaladin's team was down to 28 bridge-capable members. Sure enough, about an hour into their morning activities, caring for equipment, oiling the bridge, Lopin and David running to fetch their morning gruel pot and bring it back to the lumberyard, Kaladin caught sight of soldiers leading a line of dirty, shuffling men toward the lumberyard. Kaladin gestured to Teft, and the two of them marched up to meet Gaz.
Understand that I can't change anything here.
The slaves were bunched up, watched over by a pair of soldiers in wrinkled green coats.
Your bridge, Sergeant.
Yeah, but I don't make assignments anymore. Brightness Hashal wants to do it herself. In the name of her husband, of course.
Kaladin gritted his teeth. She'd starve Bridge 4 of members.
So we get nothing.
I didn't say that. She gave you one.
There were a good 100 men in the new group.
Which one? He better be tall enough to carry a bridge.
No, he's tall enough. Good worker, too.
The men shuffled aside, revealing one man standing at the back. He was a little shorter than average, but he was still tall enough to carry a bridge. But he had black and red marbled skin.
A parshman?
Why not? They're perfect slaves. Never talk back.
But we're at war with them.
We're at war with a tribe of oddities. Those out on the Shattered Plains are right different from the fellows who work for us.
That much, at least, was true. There were other parshmen in the war camps, and, despite their skin markings, there was little similarity between them and the Parshendi warriors. None had the strange growths of armor-like carapace on their skin, for instance. Kaladin eyed the sturdy, bald man. The parshman stared at the ground. He wore only a loincloth, and he had a thickness about him. His fingers were thicker than those of human men, his arms stouter, his thighs wider.
He's domesticated. You don't need to worry.
I thought parshmen were too valuable to use in bridge runs.
This is just an experiment. Brightness Hashal wants to know her options. Finding enough bridgemen has been difficult lately, and parshmen could help fill in the holes.
This is foolishness, Gaz. I don't care if he's domesticated or not. Asking him to carry a bridge against others of his kind is pure idiocy. What if he betrays us?
We'll see if that happens.
But...
Leave it, Teft. You, parshman, come with me.
Kaladin turned to walk back down the hill. The parshman dutifully followed. Teft did so as well.
What trick are they trying on us, do you think?
I suspect it's just what he said. A test to see if a parshman can be trusted to run bridges. Perhaps he'll do as he's told, or perhaps he'll refuse to run, or will try to kill us. She wins regardless.
Kelek's breath. Darker than a horn eater's stomach, our situation is. She'll see us dead, Kaladin.
I know.
Kaladin glanced over his shoulder at the parshman. He was a little taller than most, his face a little wider, but they all looked about the same to Kaladin. The other members of Bridge 4 had lined up by the time Kaladin returned. They watched the approaching parshman with surprise and disbelief. Kaladin stopped before them, Teft at his side, the parshman behind. It made him itch to have one of them behind him. He casually stepped to the side. The parshman just stood there, eyes downward, shoulders slumped. Kaladin glanced at the others. They had guessed, and they were growing hostile.
Stormfather, there is something lower in this world than a bridgeman.
A parchment bridgeman.
Parchment might cost more than most slaves, but so did a cho. In fact, the comparison was a good one, because parchmen were worked like animals. Seeing the reaction of the others made Kaladin pity the creature, and that made him mad at himself.
Do I always have to react this way? This parchment is dangerous, a distraction for the other men, a factor we can't depend on. Parchment, do you have a name?
The man shook his head. Parchment rarely spoke. They could, but you had to prod them into it.
Well, we'll have to call you something. How about Shen?
The man shrugged.
All right, then. This is Shen. He's one of us now.
A parchment?
Lopin lounged beside the barrack.
I don't like him, Gancho. Look how he stares at me.
He'll kill us while we sleep.
No, this is good. We can just have him run at the front. We'll take an arrow for one of us.
Syl alighted on Kaladin's shoulder, looking down at the parchment. Her eyes were sorrowful.
If you were to overthrow the Light Eyes and place yourself in power, Moash, I doubt that the world would be a very different place. The abuses would still happen, simply to other people.
But this is a parchment.
No. Shen is one of us now. I don't care what he was before. I don't care what any of you were. We're Bridge Four. So is he.
But...
No. We're not going to treat him like the Light Eyes treat us, Scar. That's all there is to it. Rock, find him a vest and sandals.
The bridgemen split up, all save Teft.
What about our plans?
We proceed.
Teft looked uncomfortable about that.
What's he going to do, Teft? Tell on us? I've never heard a parchment say more than a single word at a time. I doubt he could act as a spy.
I don't know, but I've never liked them. They seem to be able to talk to each other without making any sounds. I don't like the way they look.
Teft, if we rejected bridgemen based on their looks, we'd have kicked you out weeks ago for that face of yours.
Slowly, Teft smiled.
What?
Nothing. Just... for a moment, you reminded me of better days, before this storm came crashing down on me. You realize the odds, don't you? Fighting our way free, escaping a man like Sadeus?
Kaladin nodded solemnly.
Good. Well, since you aren't inclined to do it, I'll keep an eye on our friend Shen over there. You can thank me after I stop him from sticking a knife in your back.
I don't think we have to worry.
You're young. I'm old.
That makes you wiser, presumably?
Damnation, no. The only thing it proves is that I've more experience staying alive than you. I'll watch him. You just train the rest of this sorry lot to keep from tripping over their own feet the moment someone threatens them. You understand?
Kaladin nodded. That sounded much like something one of Kaladin's old sergeants would say. Teft was insistent on not talking about his past, but he never had seemed as beaten down as most of the others.
All right. Make sure the men take care of their equipment.
What will you be doing?
Walking. And thinking.
An hour later, Kaladin still wandered Sadeus's war camp. He'd need to return to the lumberyard soon. His men were on chasm duty again and had been given only a few free hours to care for equipment. As a youth, he hadn't understood why his father had often gone walking to think. The older Kaladin grew, the more he found himself imitating his father's habits. Walking, moving, it did something to his mind. The constant passing of tents, colors cycling, men bustling, it created a sense of change, and it made his thoughts want to move as well. He remembered the words of Derek.
Don't hedge bets with your life, Kaladin. Don't put in a chip when you have a pocket full of marks. Bet them all or leave the table.
Syl danced before him, jumping from shoulder to shoulder in the crowded street. Occasionally, she'd land on the head of someone passing in the other direction and sit there, legs crossed, as she passed Kaladin. All his spheres were on the table. He was determined to help the bridgemen, but something itched at him, a worry that he couldn't yet explain.
You seem troubled.
Syl landed on his shoulder. She wore a cap and jacket over her usual dress, as if imitating nearby shopkeepers. They passed the apothecary's shop. Kaladin barely bothered to glance at it. He had no knobweed sap to sell. He'd run out of supplies soon. He told his men that he'd train them to fight, but that would take time. And once they were trained, how would they get spears out of the chasms to use in the escape? Sneaking them out would be tough, considering how they were searched. They could just start fighting at the search itself, but that would only put the entire war camp on alert. The more he thought, the more impossible his task seemed.
Kaladin?
Getting the bridgeman out is as large a task as I've ever faced. Much more difficult than my other escape attempts as a slave, and I failed at each of those. I can't help wondering if I'm setting myself up for another disaster.
It will be different this time, Kaladin. I can feel it.
That sounds like something Tien would have said. His death proves that words don't change anything, Syl. Before you ask, I'm not sinking into despair again, but I can't ignore what has happened to me. It started with Tien. Since that moment, it seems that every time I've specifically picked people to protect, they've ended up dead. Every time. It's enough to make me wonder if the Almighty himself hates me.
I think you're being foolish. Besides, if anything, he'd hate the people who died, not you. You lived.
I suppose it's self-centered to make it all about me. But still, I survive. Every time, when almost nobody else does, over and over again. My old spearman squad, the first bridge crew I ran with, numerous slaves I tried to help escape. There's a pattern. It's getting harder and harder to ignore.
Maybe the Almighty is preserving you.
Kaladin hesitated on the street. Something about this whole conversation was wrong. He moved over beside a rain barrel set between two sturdy stone-walled shops.
Syl, you mentioned the Almighty.
You did first.
Ignore that for now. Do you believe in the Almighty? Do you know if he really exists?
I don't know. Huh. Well, there are a lot of things I don't know. But I should know this one, I think. Maybe?
I'm not sure if I believe. My mother did. And my father always spoke of the heralds with reverence. I think he believed too, but maybe just because of the traditions of healing that are said to have come from the heralds. The Ardents ignore us, bridgemen. They used to visit the soldiers when I was in Amaram's army, but I haven't seen a single one in the lumberyard. I haven't given it much thought. Believing never seemed to help any of the soldiers.
So if you don't believe, then there's no reason to think that the Almighty hates you.
Except if there is no Almighty, there might be something else. I don't know. A lot of the soldiers I knew were superstitious. They talk about things like the old magic and the Night Watcher, things that could bring a man bad luck. I scoffed at them, but how long can I continue to ignore that possibility? What if all of these failures can be traced to something like that?
Syl looked disturbed. The cap and jacket she'd been wearing dissolved to mist, and she wrapped her arms around herself as if chilled by his comments.
Odium reigns.
Syl? Have you ever heard of something called odium? I don't mean the feeling, I mean a person or something called by that name.
She zipped off his shoulder, becoming a darting streak of light, and shot up underneath the eaves of the next building.
Syl?
The Spren did not reappear. Kaladin folded his arms.
That word set her off. Why?
Storm, you woman!
Kaladin spun as a man burst out of a handsome stone building across the street and shoved a half-naked woman out in front of him. The man had bright blue eyes, and his coat, carried under one arm, had red knots on the shoulder. A light-eyed officer, not very high-ranking, perhaps Seventh Dan. The half-dressed woman fell to the ground. She held the loose front of the dress to her chest, her long black hair down and tied with two red ribbons. The dress was that of a light-eyed woman, except that both sleeves were short, safe hand exposed. A courtesan. The officer pulled on his coat. He didn't do up the buttons. Instead, he stepped forward and kicked the whore in the belly. Nobody on the street paused, though most did hurry on their way, heads down. Kaladin pushed into the roadway, pushing his way past a group of soldiers. Then he stopped. Three men in blue stepped out of the crowd, moving purposefully between the fallen woman and the officer in red. Only one was light-eyed, judging by the knots on his shoulders. Golden knots. A high-ranking man indeed. Second or third Don. These obviously weren't from Sadius's army. Not with those well-pressed blue coats. Sadius's officer hesitated. The officer in blue rested his hand on the hilt of his sword. The other two were holding fine halberds with gleaming half-moon heads. A group of soldiers in red moved out of the crowd and began to surround those in blue. Kaladin stood practically alone. the only one watching the three men in blue, now surrounded by seven in red. The woman was still on the ground. She huddled next to the blue-garbed officer. The man who had kicked her, a thick-browed brute with a mop of uncombed black hair, began to button up the right side of his coat.
You don't belong here, friends. It seems you wandered into the wrong war camp.
We have legitimate business.
He had light golden hair, speckled with alethi black, and a handsome face. He held his hand before him as if wishing to shake hands with Sadius's officer.
Come now, whatever your problem with this woman, I'm sure it can be resolved without anger or violence.
Kaladin moved back under the overhang where Syl had hidden.
She's a whore.
I can see that.
The man in blue kept his hand out. The officer in red spat on it.
I see.
The blonde pulled his hand back, and twisting lines of mist gathered in the air, coalescing in his hands as he raised them to an offensive posture. A massive sword appeared, as long as a man is tall. It dripped with water that condensed along its cold, glimmering length. It was beautiful, long, and sinuous. Its single edge rippled like an eel and curved up into a point. The back bore delicate ridges like crystal formations. Sadius's officer stumbled away and fell, his face pale. The soldiers in red scattered. With a final glare, the man in red scrambled up the steps back into the building. Kaladin was the only one on the street besides the soldiers in blue and the fallen courtesan. The shardbearer gave Kaladin a glance, but obviously judged him no threat. He thrust his sword into the stones. The blade sank in easily and stood with its hilt toward the sky. The young shardbearer then gave his hand to the fallen whore.
What did you do to him, out of curiosity?
He refused to pay. Claim and his reputation made it a pleasure for me. He kicked me the first time after I made a comment about his reputation. It apparently wasn't what he thought he was known for.
I suggest you insist on being paid first from now on. We'll escort you to the border. I advise against returning to Sadius's war camp anytime soon.
The woman nodded, holding the front of her dress to her chest. Her safe hand was still exposed, sleek with tan skin, the fingers long and delicate. Kaladin found himself staring at it and blushing. She sidled up to the bright lord while his two comrades watched the sides of the streets, halberds ready. Even with her hair disheveled and her makeup smudged, she was quite pretty.
Thank you, bright lord. Perhaps I could interest you. There would be no charge.
Tempting. But my father would kill me. He has this thing about the old ways.
A pity. Your father is quite prudish, then?
You might say that.
The man turned toward Kaladin.
Ho, bridge boy! Run and give word to Bright Lord Rero Macarum.
The shardbearer flipped something across the street toward Kaladin. It sparkled in the sunlight before Kaladin caught it. A sphere.
He's in the 6th Battalion. Tell him that Adolin Kalin won't make today's meeting. I'll send word to reschedule another time.
Kaladin looked down at the sphere, an emerald chip. More than he normally earned in 2 weeks. He looked up. The young Bright Lord and his two men were already retreating, the whore following.
You rushed to help her.
Kaladin looked up as Syl floated down to rest on his shoulder.
That was very noble of you.
Those others got there first.
You still tried to help.
Foolishly. What would I have done? Fought down a Light Eyes? That would have drawn half the camp's soldiers down on me. And the whore would have just been beaten more for causing such a fracas. She could have ended up dead for my efforts.
Kaladin began walking back toward the lumberyard.
Aren't you going to do what the Bright Lord asked?
After how he treated me?
It wasn't that bad.
I'm not going to bow to them. I'm done running at their whims just because they expect me to do so. If he was so worried about this message, then he should have waited to make certain I was willing.
You took his sphere.
Earned by the sweat of the dark eyes he exploits.
This darkness about you when you talk of them frightens me, Kaladin. You stop being yourself when you think about Light Eyes.
He didn't respond, just continuing on his way. He owed that Bright Lord nothing, and besides, he had orders to be back in the lumberyard. But the man had stepped up to protect the woman.
No. He was just looking for a way to embarrass one of Sadius's officers. Everyone knows there's tension between the camps.
And that was all he let himself think on the subject.